This morning when I came in and was hustling around getting things ready and whatever else, Robin came up to remind me about the 50th anniversary thing, and I thought, wow, another moon story. That's so cool. It was great. And the idea of them being in this space that no one had experienced, an experience of reverence it must have been. So our quote this morning, it is as impossible to live without reverence as it is without joy. On this last Sunday of Advent, when the lead up to Christmas is almost spent, when our tasks are almost done or we're out of time and it doesn't matter anyway, let me check in with each of you and all of you. Have you watched the moon lately? Oh, good. Last night it was amazing. I mean, really watch the moon as it traveled up and up or in and out of clouds or lingered in the morning light. It is hard not to feel wonder in those moments, isn't it? It's so much bigger than we are, and we feel somehow put in place. Our relevance, our significance tempered by something so much greater, magical and mysterious. Even though we know how it all works, the sun, of course, is our lifeline, our daily bread, but the moon is like our friend. What should we do about that moon? The drunken beetles ask, as if there were anything we would or could change. Yes, a profoundly useless question for which the music was set aside, and isn't that familiar? To set aside the celebration of life distracted by what we think we should or could be fixing. What does it mean to stop dancing and reveling and appreciating and revering, to imagine we have the capacity to do something about the myriad useless things we worry about? Sometimes there's simply nothing to be done other than appreciating. And yet we lose our sense of reverence, we who live here, we thinkers, especially we who are busy being the change. Because in fact, there are things we can and should attend to, and yet it's no accident that the idea for today's thinking comes to us from someone who spent more than a year in solitude on the Outer Cape. Thoreau gets a lot of play for his Walden experience, even though apparently his mother lived down the road and was happy to do his laundry. And when he wanted, he could go visit Ralph Waldo for dinner. I could be stretching the truth just a little bit there, but we learn that Henry Beston, who is the writer of our quote this morning, in 1926, had originally planned to spend just 2 weeks in his seaside home, somewhere just south of Nauset Beach on the Outer Cape. But he was so possessed by the mysterious beauty of his surroundings that he found he couldn't leave. Instead, he sat down to try and capture in words the wonders of the magical landscape that he found himself enthralled to. The migrations of seabirds, the rhythms of the tide, the wind-blown dunes, and the scatter of stars in the changing summer sky. Beston argued that the world today is sick to its thin blood for the lack of elemental things, for fire before the hands, for water, for air, for the dear earth itself underfoot. In a book review, it reminded us that 90 years after this book was first published, those words are more true than ever. He says again, the world today is sick to its thin blood for the lack of elemental things, for fire before the hands, for water, for air, for the dear earth itself underfoot. When I was thinking about this, I was thinking that, to be honest, we may be a little afraid of the idea of reverence. It infers a kind of surrender, a kind of vulnerability that we are often loath to practice or perhaps feel capable of. Sometimes it's that way with joy as well, isn't it? It just feels a little bit out of reach. Or perhaps it is that we are a bit out of practice being so preoccupied with what we should do about the moon and all. Last week, I shared a reading by Barbara Brown Taylor from her book, An Altar in the World, and I want to offer more of her thoughts today as a reminder to us. Whoever you are, she writes, you are human. Wherever you are, you live in the world which is just waiting for you to notice the holiness in it. So welcome your own priesthood, she said, practiced at the altar of your own life. The good news is that you have everything you need to begin. Welcome to your own priesthood, practiced at the altar of your own life, which is fundamentally a Unitarian Universalist thought, by the way. The priesthood of all believers, even as Martin Luther is likely to have been among the first to proclaim it, the idea that our service to the world determines our value, not our status as clergy or non. Your capacity to appreciate the holy, your reverence for all that is our lives, is the indicator of your potential. Don't you agree that without reverence, the world would simply be too bland to be endured? Without reverence, without the capacity to recognize the magic in the world, the wonder, it feels perhaps we would just be marking time. I have not suffered personally clinical depression, but I think the closest I could come to knowing it would be to imagine a world with no wonder, with no awe, with no reverence. I hope with all my heart that if that has been your experience, you have found a way beyond it. Greg Brown's words this morning, she said, Dad, the moon is coming home with us. Children, of course, are guileless enough to see wonder and be enthralled with it, to be captivated by it and experience it as reverence. I wonder if that is why we tell this Christmas story every year. Is that why we focus on the child whose inherent gifts are to remind us of our capacity? Maybe we need that reminder a bit more often than just every December. A story landed near me recently called Christmas in the ER by Curtis Mayer, who works as a nurse in a British hospital. As it happens, a man was in the acute medical unit in October at this particular hospital, where the rush is all about saving lives, and yet this was not among the savable lives. The relentless struggle to breathe had exhausted him, Mayer wrote. The progression of chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder had taken its course. As the evening progressed, it was difficult to hear his voice above the alarms beeping at him, but at some point, he took his mask off and made his request clear. Could we sing, O Come All Ye Faithful? His words were a bomb in the unit, Mayer writes, but everyone knew the unspoken code. A patient's wish should be respected. The frantic pace dropped off for a moment. People looked. Some joined in. But our little corner was bright with Christmas cheer. It was as if the benevolent spirit of Christmas past had stepped out of Dickens' novel and was sprinkling everything with magic from his torch. I'm sure there were a few Scrooges whose hearts were warmed. Sing, choirs of angels, sing in exultation, rang out louder and stronger, and we could practically hear them singing along. The whole room was filled with their glorias. It was a moment I wished would never end. Like the bird singing to the priest. It gives us chills a little bit, doesn't it? The idea that a song could create magic at a time when death was near, in the middle of an acute care unit with all the hustle and bustle. But why not? Why wouldn't we have reverence for the process, for that process, as much as for a birth? Among the many psychological perspectives on the idea of reverence, and by the way, there are lots of them, some of you may be familiar, and mostly they recommend it, by the way, we find positive psychologist Abraham Maslow suggesting reverence as what he called a peak experience. He makes the case that peak experiences happen for the religious and non-religious alike, and that they are critical to having a fulfilling life. Despite this morning's story landing in the experience of a priest, our capacity for reverence is clearly not dictated or defined by a religious impulse, at least not a specific religious impulse, so much as a shared human ability to recognize our own limitations and to celebrate the world's gifts. "Graham," she said, "the moon is coming home with us." And indeed it was. And aren't we blessed?